The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is sponsored by James Oliver Coffee Company at jamesolivercoffee.com. James Oliver is a second-generation family-owned and Detroit-based coffee roaster, offering 19 different blends of freshly roasted coffee. The company pioneered link-temperature roasting, and they source the best beans from around the world to create an outstanding coffee experience, no matter which beans you choose. To start, try the Alma Mater blend. James Oliver Coffee gives $5 for each bag of its alma mater blend to the Detroit Public Schools Foundation. And don't forget, use the promo code CFSHOW, that's CFSHOW, to get 15% off your first order. James Oliver Coffee, available at select grocery stores in Metro Detroit and, of course, at jamesolivercoffee.com. Remember, use the promo code CFSHOW to get 15% off your first order. That's jamesolivercoffee.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with me today. And if you are a regular reader of Deadline Detroit at DeadlineDetroit.com, you have no doubt looked at the ongoing coverage of the proposed merger between Beaumont Health System and Advocate Aurora based in Illinois by Eric Starkman. His blog is Starkman Approved, and of course, we have been running all of his pieces at DeadlineDetroit.com as well. And now, if you have been reading, you notice that the proposed merger has unceremoniously been called off. No doubt it has been called off because of the amount of public scrutiny that has come to light because of the coverage of Mr. Starkman, who is joining me right now. Eric Starkman, welcome back to the show. It's been about a month since we talked, and man, a ton has changed.
Sure has, and thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
It seems to me, Eric, and this is something that, you know, the healthcare system, we talked about this last time, is notoriously undercovered when it comes to media attention. It employs more people than just about any other industry around the country. It is a huge chunk of our national expenditure each and every year, yet it is so complex, people don't want to dig into the day-to-day operations of these facilities. What made you decide that Beaumont, again, was something that you needed to look at? Because this was something that likely would have just gone through without anybody batting an eye.
You know, it's a really good question, and I didn't set out to cover Beaumont. Alan Langle, the founder and editor of Deadline Detroit, is a friend of mine. And one night at the height of the pandemic, I was talking to a friend in Michigan who mentioned that his daughter's a nurse at Beaumont Royal Oak, and that Henry Ford was paying their nurses considerably more for pandemic risk. And I thought, that's interesting, and I thought I would just do a quick story for Alan, help him out. And then Beaumont closed Wayne Hospital, and they issued a statement saying, you know, the Channel 7 reported that they had closed the hospital, and they said the reporter was wrong, and it was rumored that it was, quote, temporarily paused. And, you know, you can learn a lot and tell a lot about a company by the PR statements that they issued. You know, if a company's honest and said, yes, we've closed it temporarily, and here's why, that's one thing. But temporarily paused, that was, to me, like an invitation to say, you know, yeah, you might want to keep digging a little bit here. And that's what I did.
Well, and the funny thing is that, as I said in the question there, this deal likely would have just sort of, gone through without a whole lot of people paying attention to the details of it. But through your reporting and some of the conversations you had with people that worked there and the physicians groups and everything else, it really seemed to appear to me that they were basically paring everything down to make this as appealing a takeover target as possible. And that's what it was going to amount to, was Advocate Aurora taking over the Beaumont system. It was not necessarily a merger of equals as may have been presented. The fact that it ended so unceremoniously and so quickly seems to me that there was no there on this deal.
You know, it's very astute observation. You know, here's another example of Beaumont's spin. They called it a partnership, and it wasn't a partnership. They were literally giving away Beaumont Health. The company has a $2 billion reserve, and Advocate Aurora wasn't paying a penny for it. And after the deal was done, Beaumont would have been a minority partner in a much bigger enterprise that's going to keep getting bigger. Their minority interests would have been whittled down. And it was nowhere, it wasn't a merger of equals, and it wasn't a partnership. And we learned today, and to the credit of a reporter at the Milwaukee Business Journal, he, you know, asked Advocate Aurora about Beaumont's statement that it was had to do with the pandemic and the inability to have meetings. And Advocate Aurora answered the reporter, said, no, I had nothing to do with it. It was internal problems at Beaumont. I mean, it's just shameful what they think that they can get away with in terms of the statements that they issue and the representations they make to the public and to their own staff.
Well, I mean, the slightest bit of sunshine on this deal, Eric, seemed to derail this whole merger plan. Once people actually started looking at it, including people like Andy Levin, of course, a congressperson, Beaumont Health is headquartered in his district. Once he said he wasn't going to support it, it seems that the wheels completely fell off of this. But once everybody actually started looking at it, they had no leg to stand on in terms of justifying what they were doing here. Have they ever given a reason other than, well, we just couldn't have meetings to finalize the deal to say why they decided to end it?
They have not. And that meeting, the thing about meetings in the pandemic, that doesn't hold water either. You know, Beaumont forced their admin people to come back weeks ago. And I'm not sure the status now. I think it's been relaxed a little bit. But all the admin people were considered critical and had to go back into the office. So if their admin people can go work face-to-face, why can't you have meetings face-to-face? And moreover, if hospitals cannot conduct safely face-to-face meetings when they need to, then no business should have any employees in their office. Because who should know better about, you know, COVID safety than the hospitals?
Well, Eric Starkman, my guest again, his blog is Starkman Approved. He's been covering the proposed merger that is now canceled between Advocate Aurora and Beaumont Health of Royal Oak. Like I said, this thing fizzled as soon as the sunlight touched it. And that was the weird part about it is I have not heard anybody on either the board or the administration at this point saying, look, this is a good deal. We should go forward with this. Instead, they basically buckled when the first bit of scrutiny came on there. I've never seen a company that was dead set in a merger that has been willing to bail on the prospect so simply here.
Well, I don't think they bailed so simply. I think that you had donors, you know, there was about 22 donors that got together and they actually didn't oppose the merger in their letter. They said they wanted things worked out. But my understanding is that even the donors are split. That a lot of the donors want, you know, John Fox and his deputies fired, and that they're actually against the merger.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, it took some public pressure for them to actually really start to voice their opposition to this. I mean, employees often don't feel like they have a voice in these types of situations. You know, they got brave towards the end of this. And part of that was, you know, you're digging, you're looking into this. At what point do you think this sort of the switch flipped on this one and people started saying, you know, maybe this isn't in the best interests of one, my job, two, the system and Southeast Michigan?
This is speculation on my part, but I think the letter that Mark Shevetsky, and I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but, you know, he's a real hero in this story. He didn't, you know, join forces with the rest of the donors. He wrote his own letter. And I got to tell you, I've read that letter multiple times because, you know, I'm really envious of how he structured it, you know, the logic. It was very well done. And I think that letter, you know, just crystallized for anybody who really wanted to understand the issues. This was a really, really bad deal.
Well, you know, here's a situation that Beaumont finds itself in now, though. You've got a CEO who has tried to basically work through two different mergers at this point in time. Both of them have not come to fruition. You've got a situation where you have incredibly low morale amongst the employees there. You have open revolt, in fact, among some professionals. now they've got to invest the money that they pared out of the system for a while if they want to right the ship in some capacity. I mean, it seems as if they have weakened themselves over the course of this time frame in which they were trying to get this deal done. Am I reading that right?
No, you're 100% correct. The hospital is crippled. And, you know, as long as John Fox and his deputies remain there, the ship can't be righted. And moreover, I'm not clear that his deputies are planning on sticking around. Three of his top executives, his CFO, key aide to the CFO, and the head of HR all sold their homes recently. You know, what does that tell you? And their chief marketing officer, he bailed, you know, a month or 6 weeks ago. So they obviously, you know, had a reading that this deal was going through. There was nothing for them. You know, Advocate Aurora wasn't going to hire them. And it'll be interesting to see if and how long they stick around.
Well, and I guess the attention is now going to shift a little bit. I mean, Fox had his opportunity to get this deal done. He did not get it done. As you mentioned, I mean, the confidence level in him has got to be pretty low. So now it seems that the board of Beaumont actually has to take some positive steps here, or some steps in any way, to show that they actually are handling their oversight role. Which to this point, it's not clear that they have been. At what point does this board not at least be perceived to be just, you know, somebody who is going to, you know, rubber stamp just about anything the CEO is looking to do?
Well, so far, that's what they've done. It's like, you know, according to Mark Shavesky, and again, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, but according to his letter, the board is divided. Now, he moves in those circles. I don't. So If he wrote that, and he was a senior partner at Honigman Miller. This guy, you can rest assured anything in that letter was not, you know, conjecture, that he knew he had it nailed down. And according to his letter, the board is split. That half the board wants Fox gone and the team gone, and the other half doesn't. It's my understanding that John Lewis, the board chair, is, you know, Fox's champion and protector. And, you know, he's the one who's ultimately responsible for bringing John Fox in. And he's standing by the guy.
You know, but you have to wonder how long that can last. Like I said, it seems as if Fox was brought in specifically to try to get these types of things accomplished, get some mergers, either grow or get new partners, expand their presence. It's not happening. And at the same time, the reputation of the hospital is taking a pretty big hit at the moment because, you know, hospitals normally aren't in the news unless there's something really bad going on there. And so from a PR perspective, yeah, they've got some damage control to do there, but it seems as if their root problems are a little bit deeper. They've got some fixing to do of the systems that they dismantled in an attempt to make this a more appealing partnership target.
They've got some real issues that I don't know how they're going to solve them. And, you know, the watershed moment in Beaumont's decline was awarding this outsourcing contract to a company called Northstar Anesthesia out of Dallas. And, you know, this company, you know, the mindset of Beaumont was that all the doctors that were currently working for the previous outsourcing company would all join force, you know, would all go work to Northstar. That's not happening. In part because, like, there's lawsuits that prevent them from going to work for Northstar, but these are fellowship-trained at Northern hospitals. You know, the majority of them are fellowship-trained, which means they have advanced training to do things like liver transplants and, you know, really advanced cardiac surgery. And, you know, they've already lost half the staff already. So you've got this critical problem of losing this world-class team of anesthesiologists that the world-class surgeons rely on. And the heads of cardiac surgery, of cardiology department at Beaumont Royal Oak, which is where the majority of the cardiac cases are done, wrote a letter to the chair to John Lewis himself. They didn't even write the letter to John Fox saying that they did not have confidence in North Star. That is serious stuff. And it makes a statement that they didn't even send the letter to John Fox. They sent it to the board chair. That's really unusual and shows their mindset of that they didn't think they were going to get hurt if they sent the letter to John Fox.
Well, you know, as you point out, I mean, John Fox has admitted that his goal was to look for a partner for Beaumont. That's one of the main things that he was trying to do in his tenure here. There's two failed attempts at this point in time. Beaumont does not seem like an attractive potential partner at this point in time. What's the likelihood that Fox could find somebody else that might be willing to look at a partnership or some kind of a merger, or are they pretty much just on their own now?
You know, I don't want to get into the speculation because, you know, I'm not an M&A expert, but, you know, at this point, you know, you want your hospital, you want the head of the hospital and the people that work there to be part of your community. You know, people that have ties to the community, you know, to your church, to your synagogue, to your mosque, whatever. But at this point, you know, Beaumont's been crippled, and, you know, Cleveland Clinic, you know, it's not that far away. And like, if they were going to give it away anyhow, you know, imagine if Cleveland Clinic were to take over Beaumont, you know, you could potentially do something great. Now, I don't know if Cleveland Clinic would want Beaumont. They might say there's just too many problems, but there's still some good people there. They've got a really, I mean, Beaumont's got a great bunch of people working there. And I've really been touched by, you know, I've interacted with dozens of Beaumont people, and what a great bunch of committed people, committed to healthcare, put themselves at great risk reaching out to me, but they feel that patient care has been compromised, and they put patient care ahead of their own interest. And, you know, there's still a lot of good stuff left in Beaumont. You just need a leader that appreciates it and can salvage it.
Well, you know, I mean, if you look at it from the healthcare industry perspective, I mean, Beaumont has a lot going for it. A quality payer mix, great locations in some great suburban spots where you're going to have a higher percentage of people with insurance that are going to be able to pay their bills. I mean, they don't have a ton of indigent care on their books compared to some of the hospitals in the DMC, for instance. I mean, they are primed to make profit, to potentially do a good job, obviously the nonprofit, but at the same time, I mean, you still want to make money so you can have a $2 billion fund in the books. I mean, do you get a sense from any of the people that you've talked to that their reputation as being sort of this premier health institute in the region is taking a hit as a result of this?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, the great thing about being a world-class doctor is that you're welcomed elsewhere. And I haven't been able to confirm the exact number, but you know, I was told that more than 300 doctors have applied for privileges over at St. Joe's, which is about, you know, a 20-minute drive north of the Royal Oak campus. And I know from doctors who've told me this that patients are increasingly asking that any procedures that they undergo not be done at Beaumont. But, you know, these doctors have admission privileges elsewhere, and that's where they want it done.
Wow. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this. You know, this is sort of a personal question for you, though. I mean, you've been living and breathing this now for the last few months, written a number of pieces for Deadline for this. Where do you take this next? I mean, obviously, you don't just let it go. I mean, the merger's dead. But now that you're watching, it seems like one of those things that you might be following quite a bit for quite a while.
I am, you know. And I've admitted this before, I don't see Beaumont as just a Detroit, Michigan story. It's emblematic of what's wrong with America. It really is. I mean, what you had here is, you know, John Fox would have had, you know, likely netted himself millions of dollars out of this deal. And, you know, he's very cagey. He said, I was not going to be compensated for doing the deal. And he's correct, but he has a change of contract provision likely in his contract that, like, when the hospital gets sold, he gets X amount of money to go into fade into the sunset. So, you know, it just seemed, it is wrong with what's happened at Beaumont. And I'm pursuing some other things that I've learned that are going on that are quite concerning. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, start throwing stuff out there until I have it 100% nailed down. But this story's not over yet. And it won't end as long as John Fox is there. I mean, it's very obvious.
All right. Well, I don't want you to give up where you're going on anything, because we don't want to obviously tip people off that we might have some idea of things that are happening. So I won't put you on the spot in regards to that. But it is good to know that somebody's going to be watching. You know, I guess this is a question. This is not what you normally started covering. You know, the healthcare industry, again, it's very nuanced. It's very specialized. It seems to me to be the one area of business journalism that is woefully uncovered. I said that at the beginning. I mean, now that you're learning a little bit more, what have you learned about the healthcare system that you didn't know before? And how much more is there to dig through?
Unbelievable. It's a great question. And it's unbelievable what I've learned about the industry and the opportunity for, I better be careful with my choice of words, but for conflicts of interest. And it's very poorly regulated. And these are supposedly not-for-profit companies. And let me give you an example, because this is something, you know, I think the Attorney General should weigh in on and hasn't. But, you know, not-for-profits, they have to file what's known as a 990. And, like, in those statements, you find out what John Fox and his deputies are all making, the top 10 employees in the organization. They haven't filed that report. And so we don't know what John Fox earned in 2019. You know, in 2018 and 2017, it was close to $6 million. But we don't know what he got. The other thing that's a major unknown is that the 990 show that the former CEO of Oakwood, he's been getting money for years that amounted to $9 million after he left. I mean, $9 million, and he hasn't worked at the organization since 2014. But we don't know if there's more payments forthcoming. That would show up in the 990, and they haven't filed it. They haven't filed their community report. This is the report that justifies that they're a nonprofit, all the things that they do to justify being a nonprofit. They haven't filed that report either.
Yeah, it's shocking to me that we know more about football players and football coaches, you know, contracts and structures and deals than we do about, you know, CEOs and healthcare CEOs. It boggles the mind that we've got so many reporters dedicated to figuring out whether or not Calvin Johnson's got to pay back $1 million in his contract, you know, as opposed to finding out whether or not John Fox put another $9 million in his pocket last year.
It's just astounding, and it's disappointing as well. I mean, you know, everybody was calling the, you know, caregivers at the height of pandemic, the hospital workers, you know, these are our heroes, and they were flying planes, and, you know, our frontline workers are all heroes. But where's the public now? You know, these people, you know, have taken a beating. And it's public knowledge. And where's the public to, you know, Beaumont spent $2 million to stop the nurses at Royal Oak from organizing. And the nurses union, Michigan Nurses Association, said, Beaumont's management is too formidable. We can't organize and we're not going to try anymore. I mean, this is in Detroit. You know, you would think in Michigan, there would be consequences to any organization, you know, where you had a union saying management is too formidable, but you haven't heard. UAW's been quiet. All the unions have been quiet. The political leaders, you know, to his credit, you know, Andy Levin, you know, weighed in, but where was he a couple of months ago? Well, things would have turned out very differently if they would have stopped the merger right out of the get-go like they did in Ohio.
Well, I'll tell you what, the power of journalism. A little sunshine makes a lot of different things scatter. So we appreciate the work that you've done on this, Eric, and we appreciate your time today. It really has been quite the journey to read through. And if you have not read the stories, I mean, start at the beginning and just watch how this all came down to them, of course, then just scuttling the merger. I believe it was, what, Friday that we found that out? It was Friday morning, and there was a lot of other stuff going on. So they put that out there, classic Friday news dump. It did not escape us, though. We figured it out. And Eric, it's due to you. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
All right, Eric Starkman. Again, the blog is Starkman Approved. You can also find his work regarding Beaumont at DeadlineDetroit.com. And we appreciate him being with us today. And as always, I appreciate you being with us today as well. Thank you very much for listening to the program, the support that you have been showing me. I appreciate it a ton. Like I said, listener numbers are going up. We appreciate that. But don't forget, if you like what we're doing, it helps me a ton if you indeed rate the program, share it, comment on it, leave a rating, all that good stuff. It comes back, and it's one of these things that makes it easy to sell this to advertisers, because frankly, I would like to have advertisers as opposed to relying on you to keep this program going, and that's what I like to do. So any support you can give me is something that keeps it going. I appreciate it very much. Don't forget, you can reach out to me anytime you want. TheCraigFolleyShow@gmail.com is the email address, and you can find me all over social media, both the show and my personal pages. I respond to queries at either location. It's fine, whether it's Instagram, whether it is LinkedIn, whether it is Facebook, whether it is Twitter. You can find me at any of those places, even Snapchat, believe it or not. So I love hearing from you. In the meantime, I'd also like to thank my sponsor, James Oliver Coffee, jamesolivercoffee.com. Fantastic stuff. I am drinking the Ethiopian Harar again today. Big fan of that stuff. It's quite good. In the meantime, too, though, don't forget, if you buy their Detroit Alma Mater blend, $5 from the purchase of that coffee goes to the Detroit Public Schools Foundation. So you can support the community, support a locally based, Detroit-based company, and get a good cup of joe in the meantime. It is absolutely fantastic stuff, roasted right here in the city of Detroit. I thank them for their ongoing support. We've got a lot coming up this week on the program. I do fully expect to have Dr. Abdul El Sayed on the program tomorrow. He's got a lot to say about what's going on right now with the response to the coronavirus and, of course, the recent revelations of the president getting coronavirus. That's going to be a fascinating discussion. He's got a couple of books out there right now and one that he's working on, looking at Medicare for All and the feasibility of that. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. He is an interesting guy for sure. So that's going to be on tomorrow's program. Don't forget then, on Friday, it is the week that was here on Deadline Detroit, where we break down all the week's news and try to have fun while we do it, including our regular Schmuck of the Week nominees. Always fun, and I always appreciate it when you participate as well. Remember, we broadcast that live on Facebook at 11:30 on Fridays. If you join on the Craig Folley Show's page, not my personal page, but if you watch it on the Craig Folley Show's page, you can comment, the comments will come through, and we can include them in our broadcast. And it's kind of cool to have that happening. So, yeah, give us your thoughts to what we're saying. If we are on point, let us know. If we are full of it, let us know. We appreciate it either way, and everybody's welcome to participate, and I hope that you do. Again, tell people about this show. Share it. All that good stuff. It makes a huge difference. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back with a great show tomorrow. The Craig Folley Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top, or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.